To be the person God created you to be, you'll need a solid physical, mental, and spiritual foundation. And Pietra Fitness can help. Pietra Fitness, a uniquely Catholic fitness program, offers in-person and online classes that combine stretching and strengthening exercises with Catholic meditation. Whether you've been working out for years or are looking to build a fitness habit, Pietra Fitness has a class for you. Visit www.pietrafitness.com today to start your free trial.
Brought to you by the University of San Diego, a contemporary Catholic university that's grounded in the liberal arts, anchored along an international border, and committed to advancing academic excellence to create a more inclusive, sustainable, and hopeful world. The University of San Diego, celebrating 75 years of lighting the way forward. Please visit their website at sandiego.edu/75 years. Hello and welcome back to a Reason for Hope podcast. I'm your host, Mario Costabile, and thanks for tuning in today. How you doing? I hope you're good. Remember, our state of being, how we feel, is always a matter of perspective. We should always live our lives through the lens of gratitude. It makes a difference when we are thankful for all the good in our lives. We hope that this podcast, for example, has been good for you. And if a Reason for Hope has helped you in your faith walk, well, invite someone to listen to it. Invite someone you love, a friend, a family member. Share it. As you know, we're available on all podcast platforms. Let's bring as many people to the Lord as possible. Let's make disciples of all nations. Also, prayerfully consider going to our donation page and supporting this work. Without people like you, kind people like you, and people that are devout to sharing the Christian faith, we would not exist. All you need to do is go to our website at arrayofhope.org and navigate to our donation page and make a donation. We're a 501c3 non-for-profit organization, so all donations are tax deductible. Our guest today is Matthew Warner. He is the founder of Flocknote, an innovative, communicative, all-in-one software solution helping over 10,000 churches and dioceses better connect with their flocks. He is on a mission to help the church communicate better, spending the last 20 years on pastoral councils, leading ministries, traveling all around the country, speaking to thousands of church leaders, podcasting, blogging, writing books, and creating innovative media projects that have engaged countless people. He lives in Texas with his wife and 6 children. Here is Matthew Warner. So Matthew, pleasure meeting you. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. It's great to be on with you, Mario.
Yeah, it's an honor and fun to be on with you as well. And so where are you from? Where are you calling from?
From just north of Houston in Texas, born and raised down here.
Oh, wow. The land of the scorch. It must be pretty hot over there right now, huh?
Incredibly hot and depressing with how brown and dry everything is. And all the plants are sad.
Oh,
hopefully we'll be out of that soon. There's some light at the end of the tunnel where it might stay below 100 for a day next week. We'll see.
Wow. I have friends and family that are out there. Texas is a nice state. I mean, it's very flat, right? But there are nice parts of Texas. It's big. I've been in Austin and Dallas and Houston. So beautiful, beautiful state.
No, it is a beautiful state. And yeah, you think of it as mostly flat and compared to a lot of places it is in general, but it's actually differs from, it's got mountains out west. It's got a lot of hills in the hill country of San Antonio and Austin. And then you've got the piney woods of the east and all the way down to Mexico and the beaches in the south. So get a little bit of everything.
That's awesome. So I'm excited to share this time with you. Been reading about you and reading your book, your new book, and I want to talk about those things. But before we get into that, I know you're a family man, and tell me a little about yourself and your background, and have you always been Catholic, or are you a cradle Catholic? Just share a little bit with us.
I'd love to. Yeah, so I was born and raised Catholic. We went to Mass every Sunday. It was just sort of part of who we were and what we did, got a great foundation from my parents in that respect. And again, it was just normal for me to be Catholic. It was part of who I was, and it was important to go to Mass on Sundays. But it wasn't really until I got out of college that I started to get challenged in different ways, by friends, by a girl I was dating, and you know, you start to have some of those more serious conversations in life, and you know, they started to ask, well, why are you Catholic? What's keeping you in the church? Why would you keep believing this crazy old stuff that no one believes anymore, you know, from their perspective? And so that's what getting challenged really, caused me to dig deep and say, well, I don't really have a good answer to that necessarily. It was just, you know, sort of default who I was, and I loved it, but I didn't necessarily have the answers that they were looking for. And so that drove me to learn a lot more about my faith and started reading. And every time I'd read something, it made me want to go deeper. And I just started discovering all of these amazing treasures we have in the church that I had, you know, had not really experienced to a lot of depth to that point. And just, it just kept going, you know, and that's what's beautiful about our faith is there's just treasure upon treasure upon treasure for your whole life. You get to keep digging in and then into eternity. But, so it was this wonderful discovery. When I started to learn all this stuff, I just started wondering why it seemed that nobody else I knew all of this. And a lot of my peers who were leaving the church, obviously didn't know what they were leaving. And so it started, number one, drove me to get more involved in my faith. And so I got much more involved at my own parish at the time in the youth ministry program, the pastoral council, and just doing everything I could because I was just sort of catching fire in a new way. And as I did that, realized that, we were just not doing a very good job communicating on a couple of levels. One was just getting the basic message out to people that here it is, our parish was doing all of these amazing, beautiful things, but nobody knew about them because we didn't tell them. Yeah. And so there was sort of that very practical, just get the message out about what we're doing kind of level. But then there was also the broader picture of that where we were not communicating the faith to the next generation. Because I looked around at all my peers who were drifting out of the church at the same time I was, you know, diving deeper in and wondering what the difference was. And it's communication that they had not received the things that I had received. And so it sort of inspired me to want to solve that problem a little better in terms of communication on multiple different levels. So I was an engineer at the time. I was a computer engineer at Lockheed Martin and loved my job. But as I got more passionate about this, it was around the same time that you had this explosion of new technologies, new media. I think at the time MySpace was more popular than Facebook still, but it was at that early days where these things were, it was the Wild West of software on the internet and all of and social media and all of those things. And I thought there's some sort of opportunity here to figure out how to use these new technologies and software to solve some of these communication problems in the church. And I'd also had always liked the idea of starting my own business. So all those things kind of came together and quit my job and went to work trying to solve this problem. And you know, it's always taken longer than I thought it would or hoped it would, but we've always gotten little blessings and traction along the way where something was working and we kept going and kept going, and here we are now, 15, 20 years later, we're working with over 10,000 churches and over 50 dioceses and getting to impact the church on a big level when it comes to communication.
You essentially heard a calling. You heard a sense of desire to share, like you did, like you spoke just earlier about, you know, a desire to share what you learned, the joy that you've been receiving. So what was that like, that calling where, I mean, essentially you left a job that gave you some stability and security, right? And then you formed something else. And by the way, what Matthew formed was Flocknote, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. But I want to sort of get what happened before that, the impetus of that desire and how that came into fruition.
For me, reading was a big part of it. I had never been much of a reader. It wasn't till really 9/11, so that was in college when that happened. And I started to become more aware, of course, that age is more aware of the world and and everything else going on around us and sort of bigger social responsibilities and all of those kind of things. And that translated as I got really passionate about my faith into this great thirst for knowledge and understanding of our faith and why we do the things we do. As an engineer, that first took the form of apologetics for me. So thinking about the reasoning for why we believe what we believe. Up to that point, I just assumed, you know, we just kind of did it because it was passed on to us. And this is how we've always done it as Catholics. And so the idea of explaining that this is, that we do this for a good reason versus, you know, some, why someone might disagree with that, that they might have reasons also, but that it's really just a matter of, you know, what you've been passed down and opinion or culture or what you, you know, what your preferences are, all of that. But as I dug more into the, you know, the long tradition of apologetics in the church and really the our love of reason and for that being really intertwined with our faith in a way that this, there's a capacity that God gave us to understand what he did and that it's intelligible and that he left us clues all along the way of how we should live and what we should do and why we do all these beautiful things in the church. And I started discovering all of that and it just blew me away. I thought, surely we can explain this to people and then they will all become Catholic. And so I that was some of my naivete at that age, I think too, which was a good motivation. It was a good, energy that it gave me. It drove me forward in a way that was really positive. But I also learned quickly that it's much more complex than that, you know? And so those were some of the early lessons I learned as well of just the ways different people come to the faith, and all the different, you know, the messiness of being human and all the things tangled up in why we end up doing the things that we do are not always rational and easily reasoned. Although when you look for the reason in the church, it's all there. And so I loved that part of it as an engineer. That drew me into it. It was a way in for me. It's not necessarily the way in for everybody, but for me, that was huge. And then it just sort of led to more and more things from there. But certainly lots more debating and conversations, some for good, some for worse, with people I knew, with friends, people that believed differently. But all we all got more knowledgeable and grew in our faith as a result of it. So that was definitely an early part of it for me.
So as you were developing your intellect and really you were growing in your faith, there must have been a point in time where you invoked a sense of trust in the Lord that, you know, I'm going to devote my life to him. I'm going to devote all my resources, my skills and talents to share the gospel in a way that utilizes my gifts and talents. So when was that pivotal moment in your life where you said, okay, I'm all in?
When I look back, and it's challenging to point to it, I think there was a foundation I received from my parents that truth is discoverable and that it matters and a level of integrity that therefore your life, like you should behave as if that's true. And so it was really just a natural sort of reaction to discovering all of these things and how true they were about the church. And as that came to the forefront in my mind and my life, there wasn't really another option in a sense. It was just like, well, this is the most important thing in my life. Therefore, everything should revolve around it. And so I think there was a foundation there that then produced the reaction that I had whenever I discovered those things. And so there was always, I think I was raised with those values of being authentic and having integrity and that truth is something you can see and understand. And then you're responsible for after that you have an obligation in some way to either share that or live your life according to that. And so when that happened with my faith, it just sort of naturally took on that form. But even that took time because you're discerning. And so first it was just getting really involved and, you know, it was going to things like the March for Life and getting involved in as many different organizations as I could at the time. And really at that time, developing my own personal prayer life in a new way as well. And that took a lot of time. The rosary was huge during that time for me. And I just, it formed this foundation in me that I think was going to feed me in many, many ways for decades to come from a prayer life standpoint. So all of those things had to happen as well. And all of that took time. And then meeting my wife in the midst of that, she actually converted to become Catholic right before we got married. And but all of those were really important conversations we had in discerning life forward. I was at one point, discerning whether I should, become a priest or join a religious order. All those were very attractive to me during that time. I had met some young friars that just exuded a kind of joy and peace that was so attractive. I was like, how can I not consider this? So it was a time of sort of looking at a lot of things in a new way. Once all of that stuff came to the forefront, that then dictated, what should I do? And so I did wrestle with, should I quit my job and work for the parish? Because there's all these needs, as soon as you get involved in the church in any way, you see all the needs. There's way more things to do than there are people to do them. And so then it's a matter of discerning what's the best way that I can contribute. And so, those were things that I wrestled with. Should I become a youth minister? Should I work at the parish in some way? Should I work at the diocese? Should I work at some nonprofit or a ministry? So those were all things that went through my head, and I was exposed to lots of those and attracted to a lot of those because I saw the potential and the need and that, I could potentially help in some way.
Yeah.
And so that took time too, years of discerning, looking at my skill set, looking at where that overlaps with the opportunities and the needs in the world, along with, whatever passions I have and what God might be calling me to do.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, look, our faith is a progression, right? We're all on this journey. God has a plan for us. And, we all need to understand that we're always seeking. And essentially you heard that calling, make disciples of all nations, right? And that was the call that you heard, which led you to becoming the creator of Flocknote. So share with our listeners and viewers, what is Flocknote? And you founded this, what, almost 10 years ago, right? Something like that?
2009, actually.
Okay, so wow. Okay, so share with us, what is Flocknote?
So it started out before that as something actually different. And it was more a Catholic group networking site, similar to like a Facebook groups before they came out with Facebook groups. And it was this place, this private social network that a parish could go and interact and share information. And, as we tried that out and built it out and got feedback from people that were trying it out that all thought that sounded like a great idea, they all learned that it was just another place people had to go. And it was another place they had to update information, and it didn't overlap enough with the rest of their lives and all the other communications and things they were doing. And so that's what led to the idea for Flocknote one day. This is after I quit my job and I got married, quit my job, which my wife was very supportive of.
Wow.
And it was a big leap of faith. But I remember about 6-9 months after I quit my job and had already been doing that for a couple of years, working on this other solution before Flocknote. And she came home one day. We didn't have any kids yet. She was working at the time, and she came home from work, and I told her, well, we're throwing all that in the garbage and we're starting over. And God bless her. She was supportive of that as well. But that's where I came up with the idea for Flocknote, which was to basically flip it on its head and to come up with a place people could push information out. Leaders in the church could push information out to the places that people were already communicating, already receiving information. Mm-hmm. And so it started out, sending emails, text messages, making phone calls, updating your Facebook page, updating your Twitter profile and all your social networks and things like that. And so that really caught on. And it was the right idea at the right time for church leaders who were struggling to kind of manage all the different places and ways people were communicating. Mm-hmm. But over time, really email and texting proved to be way more effective and way more practical. And so while we still do those other things, that's primarily what Flocknote took on was first email. So just managing a good email list and being able to send that out to your parish or your ministry that you're working in. And then as texting got more popular and churches became more comfortable with using it and parishioners became more comfortable with getting text messages from lots of places, that's become equally as powerful. And so for most of our life now, that's been our bread and butter, is helping parishes, ministries, dioceses be able to manage their email lists and text messages lists well, be able to capture that most important contact info from your parishioners of cell phones and email addresses, and manage it well amongst all the different groups and activities you have going on. And then now in recent years, we've continued to expand that to helping them raise more money, manage their database, get people registered for events, all of those kind of things too.
I mean, the church's primary function is, you know, communication and to be in communion with God and his church, right? Establishing a community. But yet so many parishes I see fall short or fail at this. And why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think maybe it's a lack of recognition for what you just acknowledged, which was that communication is a kind of linchpin skill or activity of the church, that, you know, we train our leaders in theology, we train them in, you know, moral teachings of the church, we change them in train them in pastoral ministry and how to understand the scripture and liturgy and apologetics and all those kind of things. But what we don't often help them with is becoming great communicators and great leaders, because those are the skills that help you wield all of those other skills you have in an effective way. And that the heart of sharing the good news is communicating. That's the task in front of us, is to communicate something, to bring us into communion with God and each other. And so that's that linchpin skill. And we very often neglect, I think, training our leaders in how important that is. And we sometimes think of communications as one department or one person, and they're the ones that do the communicating. But that's not true. Of course, every leader, every person that does anything of substance in the church has to communicate in some way. And it's not just leaders of the church. It's our families. It's if you're leading a household, if you're leading your group of friends, if you're, you know, in any way, all of us lead in some capacity. And communication and understanding how to be good at it is fundamental to our success in all of our relationships, but especially when it comes to evangelization.
Mm, yeah, amen. I mean, really, in the 21st century here, I mean, the crisis of the church, really, when you boil down it in a nutshell, is communication. I mean, so many people are leaving the church and they really don't understand what they're leaving, or they don't understand the teachings of the church, or they're unfulfilled within their community. And even in amongst the teachings that the church proclaims, many disagree with it, or they just don't understand it, or they're just confused about it. How can the church do better in delivering or communicating, you know, its message?
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason I wrote the book, was to kind of take all the lessons we've learned helping parishes do this for the last 10 or 15 years and share it with more leaders. And I think it applies equally as well to parish leaders as it does any ministry leader, to any, again, a family, leading your friends to do something, trying to help someone come to their faith in a new way. And there really are some fundamental communication principles that we often forget. So when people think of communication, a lot of times they jump to the tools. You know, they jump to, okay, we need to be on social media, we need to send emails, we need to, you know, make an announcement or build a website, you know. But that's just the tools that you communicate with. That's not actually communicating necessarily. And communication is not just saying things. Of course, communication is having it being received on the other side in some successful way, some level of success. So that means it's been communicated. And so often when it comes to evangelization, we reduce it to just the talking part or the saying part. And they think, if I've said it, then I've communicated it. And that's very often not the case. And so it starts with recognizing that communication is much more than just what we say. And that there's all these other layers to it, that if we want to be successful communicators, we have to understand first and make sure we're addressing. And I think we skip over those a lot because they're the hard part.
The book that you just mentioned is called Why They Follow, which is really a short little tight book. It's a good read. You can get through it really in a couple of hours. I've been looking at it and reading it. It's really informative, I have to say. You did a great job on it. And you're kind of sharing it a little bit already. Why did you write it? Why do you think there was a need to write such a book and get it out to the church?
Well, we work with hundreds of thousands of church leaders, and they're amazing, inspiring people. I'm inspired every day when I get to interact with them at the amazing work that they're doing, at the sacrifices they make, at how much they care about what God's doing and God's work. Mm-hmm. And, but I often see how much some of these common mistakes they make when it comes to communicating is hurting their work and why people don't see what they're doing. And I think, again, I experienced it at my own parish where you feel like there's not much really going on here, but you dig under the surface a little bit and there's actually amazing things going on here. There's really important ministry happening. There's lives being changed, but most people don't know about it because we're not very good at communicating it. And we're not very good at communicating it to the people that need to hear it most. And so again, it was, I saw a bunch of these hundreds of thousands of these church leaders we work with getting on a tool, and you can get on one of these digital tools, whatever it is, and you can do just as much damage as you can good if you're not communicating well. And so a lot, again, there's that tendency to want to take the shortcut. It's like, oh, people don't know about what we're doing at the church, so let's jump on this megaphone and blast out as many things as we can on as many different channels, and then that'll fix it. And of course, that hasn't fixed it. That's made people, in some sense, leave more quickly, you could say. That's certainly what's happened. Is as you look at the stats of the church, we're not just in a slow decline. We're in the middle of a collapse. I mean, the entire bottom is falling out, where you have a generation of people that have not successfully passed on the faith to their kids, and they're not going to be back, and they're not going to be back with their kids, most of them. Mm-hmm. And so it's happening much more quickly. And when you look at the graphs, and I share some in the book there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that there was this slow decline, and then it's just accelerating faster now. Right. And we haven't even seen the full results of it yet. You know, we're behind. These are all lagging indicators that we're looking at.
Yeah.
So it's a worse situation than we think, I think, although we want to be hopeful, and there are certainly plenty of bright spots to look at, and we just have to march forward. But I think realizing that just getting on the online and just blasting out a bunch of information, that's not fixing it. It's not going to fix it. And I was really passionate to try to help these well-intentioned, really great church leaders be more effective at what they were doing. And so that was sort of the main impetus for the book, was let's get some of these fundamental lessons in there. And we break the book into two spots. The first half is looking at these guiding principles that you need to kind of reset and back up and understand these core ideas first before you then jump in and start using all these different tools. And then the second half of the book is largely a lot of practical insights and advice on how to use these tools and implement a lot of these things that you learned from the first part.
You were made for greatness, but to become the person God created you to be, you'll need to have a solid physical, mental, and spiritual foundation, and Pietra Fitness can help you build it. Pietra Fitness is a uniquely Catholic fitness program that offers in-person and online classes, combining stretching and strengthening exercises with Catholic meditation, bringing life and health to the whole person. Pietra Fitness has workouts to help you improve your posture, balance, flexibility, and core strength, reduce stress, and increase spinal and joint mobility, all while nourishing the soul with prayer. Pietra Fitness even offers chair classes, prenatal and postnatal classes for new moms, and their new Pietra Kids program will help your kids get their bodies moving, find peace in an increasingly stressful world, and fall in love with their faith. Visit www.pietrafitness.com today to start your free trial. www.pietrafitness.com.
Brought to you by the University of San Diego, a contemporary Catholic university that's grounded in the liberal arts, anchored along an international border, and committed to advancing academic excellence to create a more inclusive, sustainable, and hopeful world. This year, USD is proud to be commemorating its 75th anniversary, working side by side with neighbors near and far to make this world a better place. USD is dedicated to confronting humanity's challenges by fostering peace, working for justice, and leading with love. As USD embarks on the next 75 years, it looks forward to inspiring a new generation of changemakers who will be the change this world desperately needs. The University of San Diego, celebrating 75 years of lighting the way forward. Please visit their website at sandiego.edu/75 years. So if you're wondering how you can help this ministry, rating and reviewing this podcast is the best way to help others hear it, as well as sharing it with your friends and your family. So join us in this mission by rating, reviewing, or sharing this episode with someone you think needs to hear it. And we want to thank you for your continued support of A Reason for Hope podcast.
Yes, yes, exactly. I mean, your book is broken down into two parts, general principles in leadership, and then practical tips, practical lessons, right? And the first part, you talk about articulating the big vision, really, of the church, and many organizations worry about these sort of secondary concerns. But we do need to focus on purpose, as you articulated in the book many times. How can churches and organizations do that?
I think one of the main ways, and we talk about this in the book as well, and then we also have a follow-on free short course that people can take on the book website that helps you, talks about the importance of setting big goals. Mm-hmm. So I think that setting good goals is really, I think, something that's missing in a lot of layers of the church. We have a mission statement, which is usually pretty broad and pretty vague. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really know for sure, did we achieve it? Are we achieving it? When will we achieve it? And that's okay. A vision or mission statement often is giving more of that visionary long-term perspective of what we're trying to do. But then we have kind of our day-to-day stuff that comes in, and we usually get consumed with, or we can get consumed by the urgent rather than the important. We're sort of just trying to keep up from drowning from all the responsibilities or all the activities we think we need to do. But what's missing from a leadership and communication perspective are often these big goals that live somewhere in the middle. What are we trying to achieve as a group right now, as a community? What's meaningful for us and concrete that we're trying to do in the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years that we're trying to achieve? And how can we make that more concrete? So that's something we give some tips on how to do that a little bit better. Because when you make it concrete, and I give the example in there of you know, when JFK said, we're going to go land someone on the moon this decade and bring them back safely. That's a concrete thing. You know whether you've achieved it. And it's something that's just outside of our reach, but it's possible. You can conceive that it's possible because we can see how this might happen. And then we did it, you know, in less time. But you knew when we did it, it was inspiring. It got everybody moving and it got people unified at working on something. And a lot of times in the church now, you feel like every ministry is kind of doing their own thing, spinning their, you know, going in a different direction. And we don't really have something that unifies us as a community of something we're trying to do together. Mm. And if you look at the things that, you know, that are often, a lot of times I'll hear leaders in the church say, well, people just aren't, they're so apathetic now. They're not responsive. They're so distracted. And that's true about certain things, but they're super hyper-focused and very energetic about some things. And if you look at what those things are, whether it's their politics or a TV show that they're interested in, or, you know, some celebrity they're following or something they're doing, you'll see these other qualities where there's something clear they're trying to achieve or do or change in the world that they care about. And then second, the leaders communicated what's at stake, which is another sort of fundamental principle that we often forget to communicate in the church, is like, what's at stake if we achieve this goal? Does it matter? If we don't achieve it, what happens? Is it bad? Is it good? It's not always clear. We don't always talk about what's at stake. And when there's not much at stake, people aren't going to put much into it. They're not going to put that much energy into it. But when a politician, rightly or wrongly, communicates to somebody that something big is at stake if we lose this election, people rally around it. They donate their money. They donate their time. They talk about it with their friends. They read books about it. They learn all about it and they debate it with people because they care about what's at stake. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to our faith, somehow that doesn't happen. Well, it's because we haven't communicated to them that there's anything that meaningful at stake. And if there's not anything that meaningful at stake, then people react accordingly and they invest accordingly with their time and their money and sacrifices and all of that kind of stuff. And so one of the quotes that always comes to mind when I talk about this is C.S. Lewis's, where he says that Christianity is either of no importance or of infinite importance. Mm. And the one thing that it can't be is moderately important. But when you walk into our parishes, when you hear our communications, when you're engaged with something in the church, it very often feels moderately important. And if something's moderately important today, it doesn't make it to the top of their list of things to do. There's too many other competing things that are really urgent and important right now. and it's just not going to make it. And so that's, we see it shift to the back burner for people in their lives. It becomes secondary. It's just something they do on Sunday. It's something they try to get their kids to do if they can. It's something that's nice to happen if we can make it work with the rest of our lives. But when it's infinitely important and something big is at stake, which there is, then it becomes the center of your life.
Yeah.
And you can sacrifice everything for it. And everything else in your life revolves around it. And that's the shift that we have to help people make, but we're not often communicating in that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's infinitely important. I mean, it's the salvation of our souls, but people don't look at it that way. I think people have the mindset that we'll live, you know, we're going to be here forever. They don't think about the existence of eternity. They don't existence that, you know, at some point in time, we're all going to die and where do we end up? So I'm with you on that 100%. When people have a completely different view of what you believe in, where do you find the commonality and how do you communicate and have your message received? Like one of the chapters in your book, which I thought was really cool and you had some great analogies or great points, is that cultivating soil, right? Which sheds light on this. Maybe you could share that a little bit with us.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite chapters as well, because I think it's one that I think just learned over and over again as I've tried to share the faith with people. And trying to figure out how can I be a good communicator.
You know what? And I just want to interrupt you because obviously you're going to say this. I mean, you lifted it from scripture. And I just want to remind people, scripture is brilliant. I mean, the parables that Jesus used, I mean, they're just extraordinary. So I just inspired to share that because we need to go deeper. And you kind of pointed out the purpose of and laid out what that meant. So go ahead, Ben.
Yeah. So the foundation, like you said, the foundation of that chapter is the parable of the sower. And these parables are genius and they're so mysterious and big that you can enter into them and you can apply them to all these different places in life and they continue to yield fruit and knowledge and wisdom and help us navigate all these things. And so they have so many layers of meaning. So you can take these and apply it in so many positive ways and they're all helpful and true. But one of them is, and this is what just became obvious to me when I was reading it in recent years and thinking about communication, and that, you know, you think about evangelization as just throwing the seeds. And certainly there's an element of that I'm going to sow generously, and that's beautiful. And I'm going to put the faith everywhere I can. I'm going to live it out. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And that's true. And there's a lot of beauty in that, that God is going to use those seeds. Sometimes places you think they wouldn't, it's not going to grow, it does. Some places you think it will grow, it doesn't. And that's part of the mystery and our limited knowledge. And our job is just to sow generously. And so I don't want to take anything away from that reading of the parable, because I think that's absolutely true. But I think there's also another way to look at it that's also really helpful. And that's that if we want more of those seeds to grow, then our main job in communicating, if we want to be a successful communicator, is not casting the seeds, it's in cultivating soil. And that's, it's preparing that soil so that it can receive all that we want to give it and all that God wants to give it. And that's actually the hardest part. So if anyone's done any gardening before or any farming, my family and all our kids, we love getting outside and doing this kind of work because I think it's a great place to learn a lot of these lessons in real life. But if you've done any of that, you know that putting the seeds in is like the easiest part and the fun part at the end. The hardest part is getting the soil ready. It's all the work to weed it and fertilize it and make sure it's got the right balance of everything and to care for all of that over time. So that when you do put the seed in, and if you've done that hard work, you put the seed in and it's great. Amen. Everything goes well.
Yeah.
And so that's a really great, powerful analogy for when we think about communicating, because often we're just throwing seeds out at people and saying, I did my job.
Right.
I evangelized, I communicated, but you actually haven't, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that more often our responsibility is to get down into those situations and not just dust off our shoes, but to get down and get dirty with our hands. And that means building relationships that might take years or decades before that seed's received.
Yeah, yeah.
It's taking on their problems. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. Yeah, 100, I'm agreeing with you. I mean, you know, cultivation takes time, right? Exercising the virtue of patience and really preparing. I agree with everything that you're saying. You know, what comes to mind in speaking with you and then reading the book is that, I mean, you can use these techniques. You don't have to be a church leader. You could be running an organization such as A Ray of Hope or any other organization that evangelizes, but you could even use these techniques and ideas and concepts with just even communicating to your family and to your friends. I mean, I find a lot of insight that can be applicable across the board in any situation. So thoughts on that, or what do you think about
that? Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think that's where I've learned most of it. As much as I've worked with you know, thousands of parishes and parish leaders now, I think I've learned much more from, we've got our seventh child on the way. So I've had a lot of kids. And my wife and I have spent a lot of time talking about how do we pass on the faith to our kids, which is to say, how do we communicate it to them? How do we make sure that they are in communion with God and with us and our faith and our church? And it's exactly that. And a lot of the lessons and even some of the examples I give in the book are lessons I've learned being a father and trying to be a better one and trying to figure out, like, what do my kids actually get? I say all these things to my kids, but it doesn't seem like they hear it very often. I have to keep repeating myself and I don't get it. But then I see the things that they do. I see the things that they are. I see the things that they really believe. And when I examine my life, I'm like, yep, that's what I do all the time. Yep, that's how I behave all the time. Yep, that's how I organize my life to say what's important. And you realize that most of what we communicate, or at least the most powerful things we communicate, are not the things we say. It's the actions that we take, it's the things that we do, and it's the people that we are. And I think that that's sort of at the heart of all of our communicating, is our actions speak much more loudly than words. And when we look at our lives, and I think about, again, I think this applies very fundamental, and really I think it's the front lines of evangelization right now, is how do we help parents pass on the faith to their children?
Yeah,
I think that's the most important thing we need to do right now. It's not all these other challenges, which are good, real too. But I think that's the front lines of it, the most important, and where we're going to have the biggest impact over generationally is how do we pass this on to our children?
Yeah.
And again, you think about what gets communicated, and one of the fundamental principles we talk about in the book, what you say most loudly is almost nothing what comes out of your mouth. It is, what do you make the biggest sacrifices for in your life, and what is your life ordered around? So what do you make the biggest sacrifices for in your life? What are you willing to make the biggest sacrifices for? And what is your life ordered around? And if you look at your actions, if you zoom out and try to be unbiased as possible and sort of look at your schedule, look at how you make decisions, look at, you know, what you're willing to make sacrifices for. Are you willing to get up early to go hunting? Great. Are you willing to get up early to go to Mass? Maybe. What if we're up late the night before? Are we up late to watch the big game? Are we willing to still get up and go to Mass? You know, so you see those little decisions you make. Do we have time to pray together as a family tonight? Well, no, we were too busy doing this or that or the other thing. Well, our actions just communicated what was more important to our family and what was more important to each other. So again, you look at your actions and then you look at what you make the biggest sacrifices for, whether it's, you know, when you make decisions about your career, about your schedule, about your work life, about where you live, about, you know, your schedule during the week, about the extracurricular activities you take on. What does it say to your kids? All those things communicate way more to our kids than anything we will teach them on Sunday, anything we're going to, you know, teach them in a lesson here or there when we decide to sit down with them and talk to them about it. So again, like, all these things apply to all situations where we're trying to communicate something, but
yeah,
definitely in the family and with our peers in our lives. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, we are an example, right, to our children. Our actions speak volumes. So like you had said, if we place importance on, you know, going to a basketball game at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, that speaks volumes. You know, it's almost a contradiction if we're saying one thing, that we have to believe in God, but yet we don't share that in our families in a rule of importance in going to Mass with the family on Sunday. Kids are not dumb. You know, people can see through all that, you know?
And you see that's exactly what they're doing.
That's right.
When they're graduating from high school, they're getting confirmed, and going to college, and most of them are not going to Mass, but they're making the football games, right?
That's right.
And then when they decide what they're going to do in their life or where they're going to live, the decisions they make, you know, what we taught them for most of their education growing up, at least in the sort of most common sort of modern lifestyle, is most important, get good grades, go to college, right? So a lot of them are going to college.
Yeah.
But we haven't equally, and we should be doing even more so, make sure you live your faith, that that's the most important thing in your life. Everything revolves around that. Your career and your grades and your college and all that is secondary to that. But again, if we don't live that way, if we don't educate them that way, if our life doesn't reflect that same sort of value trade-off,
yeah,
then that's what they go off and they live. And that's right. What we see. We're getting exactly what we've taught them to do.
The graphs and the statistics that you showed in your book, I mean, really, quite frankly, they're astounding. There are many church leaders, and I'm sure you speak to many of them, that just don't want to look at that. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, it's a reality. And in your book, you share that, and I agree with you, it's really the end of Christendom, right? I mean, many churches still operate with the mindset of a Christendom that existed over 50 years ago. And we're still thinking that everyone is accepting God in our culture, but that time has since passed many, many years ago. The idea that we all are on the same page as far as the church teachings or the beliefs of the church, and then we try to evangelize and spread the message thinking that we're all on the same page, when in reality, we're not. We're light years away. So maybe you could share a little bit about that chapter, about the reality that it's a different playing field than where the church what is today versus where the church was 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I came across that idea of the age of Christendom versus an apostolic age, it was a lens that just enlightened so many different, like, it's so helpful, I think, in how we think about all of these challenges and problems today. And it allows us to understand, well, why do we have to do anything that different than what our parents did, or what our grandparents did, or what our great grandparents did? It seemed like you just do these things and people turn out okay.
Right.
And I think when you're in a Christendom age, which really was from, like, you know, the fourth century till, you know, the middle of the 20th century, we could say that the West was in largely a Christendom age. Doesn't mean that we always lived it well, or that the individuals, you know, were, you know, perfect examples of it or anything like that, but that the general milieu, the sort of guiding vision of the basic principles that everybody lived by,
right,
were compatible with Christianity. And so
all on the same playing field. We were all in communion with real morality, essentially, right? I mean,
right. The basic vision of society was compatible with Christianity. So when you taught Christianity, it wasn't immediately in conflict when you went out into the world. And so it was easy to just keep living that. And what happened, you know, over the last 50 years, and really starting before that, we shifted back to this apostolic age, where the basic values of our society became in conflict with our Christian faith. So something as simple as, like, well, the individual is the most important thing, and my expression of my own freedom is sort of the highest good, right? That is in complete contradiction with the Christian life. So that's just one example, and I list a bunch in the book. But, you know, when you are taught a certain way, like raised in your faith, but then you go out into the world, and the fundamental principles of everything else around you is in complete contradiction with it, if this isn't super strong, if this isn't ready for that, it's going to get run over by it. And that's what we see happen, is people go out into the culture and they become adults, and they're just run over by the culture, and they're just absorbed into it because they haven't been given an apostolic mindset that, hey, what you're getting ready to go into is in complete contradiction with the truth, in complete contradiction with our faith. And if you're not ready for it, you're not going to be it anymore. And so it really does mean that in our family, and again, it applies even more so to families than even how we run the church, but the church is the same way, where you look at our institutions, where they're 100 years old or longer, and there's a lot of beauty and tradition and truth that, like, is passed through those traditions, which I am absolutely respectful of and yield to in almost all situations. But you also have to recognize that some of those traditions that worked, some of those just ways of operating that worked for hundreds of years are failing miserably now, because there was a total shift in the culture. And this is really pre-Vatican II. So people kind of sometimes sort of want to lump that all up and say, oh, Vatican II did this. But all of this cultural shift and mindset started happening in the, you know, really the Industrial Revolution, the French Revolution, all of that stuff philosophically, but was already bearing fruit in the early 1900s. And part of the reason Vatican II was like, we need to figure out how to get ahead of this. And we can argue about the things that were done after that of whether they helped or not. But the point was, is there was already a problem that already most of the church was not seeing eye to eye with, sorry, most of the faithful were not seeing eye to eye with a lot of church teachings, with where things were going,
right,
because what was happening was the culture was having a massive shift away from Christendom and this Christendom mindset. And we had not prepared our people to live in an apostolic age where you have to like know what we believe and why we believe it and have deep roots if you're going to go out there and weather that storm. And so how we raise our families, the things we put them, you know, the things we teach them, the way we teach them, how we run our institutions, how we educate our kids, how we run a parish, all of that has to adjust to a very different age. And I think we're still catching up in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, hence the point of the book and your work is communication. Communication is paramount. And the conduit that's used in our culture and in our church today is got to be contemporary. It's got to be relevant to receive the messages of the ancient church, really. You know, we have to modernize the deliverable, which is what you do and the techniques that you're using. So a quick question is, so the title of your book is Why They Follow. Explain the title.
I think the goal was to get to those, and you're right, there are some modern adjustments we need to make, new tools, and a lot of new wisdom. You know, that's what's one of the great benefits of the information age is we can share best practices and ways of doing things a lot easier. It spreads quickly if it's a good idea. So that's really valuable. But I think even more important in the book is really getting to some fundamentals that are ancient, right? It's really going back to being more intentional about, well, if we want to communicate something, what are the things we need to do? Because we're not doing it very well. Mm-hmm. And that's not a modern idea. That's just getting back to the basics. And why they follow is kind of a way of framing that in a sense is like getting back to why are people supposed to follow us in the first place? Why does someone follow a leader? Because I think if you ask a lot of these leaders, they're posting something on their Facebook page and they're like, why won't it says post something every day and I'm posting something every day, but people aren't engaging or people aren't responding or people aren't following us. And it's, you got to ask that more fundamental question. Well, where are you going? Where are you leading them? Because that's why someone follows you. It's not because you post a certain amount of times a day or you're using the right tool or you've checked all the right boxes. It's because you're leading them somewhere that they want to go. And so there's the ultimate vision. We're hopefully leading them to heaven, but then there's also those big goals. What are we doing as a community right now to live that out, to manifest it in the world? And that's where those big goals come in. And that's where we're leading them. We're leading them to achieve something. And it needs to be something we can name, that we can identify, that we can measure in some form so that people can go, oh, I care about that. That's something I value. I want to help make that happen. And you seem like someone who's going to help make that happen. Let's get together and let's do this. And I'll sacrifice some time and I'll sacrifice some money and let's make this thing happen. But you don't actually have a lot of that sense with a lot of communications in the church. You get the sense that it's like, well, we need to send out a weekly email. So let me make a weekly email. Well, what are things that go in a weekly email? Well, we have these kind of things and these things and we fill this spot and we do this. And well, we need a website. Okay, well, what are things that go on a website? Well, here's a website I like. They have a little widget here and they put this on the front page. Let's do that too, which is the total backward way of doing all of those things. You start with, where are we leading people? What are we trying to achieve? And then if you have a clear vision and a meaningful goal, those other things work themselves out. And there are better and worse ways to do them, but you have to start there. So that's, again, kind of the fundamental premise of the book is why are people following you in the first place? And if you can't answer that question and give them a meaningful place that you're leading them, then all the other tips and tricks and, you know, best practices are not going to do you any good.
Amen. Yeah, the why is crucial. Great, great, great point. And I wanted to also clarify, to be clear, I wasn't indicating modernizing the teachings of the church at all. It's just I'm sharing this with our viewers and listeners because they came from Christ. We just have to figure out ways to communicate those teachings in our modern day world, you know, so, which Absolutely. Is really, yeah. you know, you're really doing a super job, Matt, with your book and Flock Note. And, is there anything else that's on your heart that you want to share with our viewers and listeners at this time?
I would just encourage all of them in their faith and in whatever seed brought them here. Just keep going, you know, cause I think that was, I know for my journey, that was, it's just you, God gives you a little crumb and then you cherish that crumb and he gives you another one and it just keeps going and it keeps leading to deeper and deeper treasures and it doesn't end. And that's the beautiful thing, whether this is sort of like day one of you saying, hey, I need to get more serious about my faith, or you've been, you know, getting more serious about your faith for decades and decades. God is just always leading us deeper into something more beautiful and more mysterious and bigger than anything we can wrap our heads around. And it's just a beautiful journey. And so I would just encourage everyone in that way. And if there is any elements of that, that they want to get better at communicating, then you know, they're welcome to check out the book. The website, whytheyfollow.com has you know, places you can get it and also some other free resources and short courses that we offer in that regard as well.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to put your link and all your information in our sections where people can acquire that information. So, Matt, it's been great. I think to really articulate in more firmly way that, you know, what's at stake? You know, our soul's at stake. And what's more important than that, right? And our journey can be full of joy and living in union with Christ and his church. It doesn't have to be a struggle. It doesn't have to be a labor, right? So I think that's something that you and I both share. We want to share that with everyone that we meet. We want to share that through our ministries because we have to reorganize. We have to prioritize really existence in our world today. And I think, in the work that you're doing, that's really helping out, especially, you know, with you in your work for parishes across the country. You've grown so much, and I was looking at some of your numbers. It's really impressive, and I'll pray for you and your organization that it continues to grow because the church does need, you know, this kind of help.
Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate that, and thank you for all your work at Array of Hope and the work you guys are doing. You know, same things to you guys. It's an honor to get to do this kind of thing together. It is a great joy. And yes. God, that's a gift God gives us no matter what, or he wants to give us if we're willing to receive it. Amen. And no matter what's going on in our lives or what challenges we have or what suffering we're going through is his peace and joy. So it's wonderful to get to do that with you guys.
All right, my brother. Peace. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mario.
So glad that you joined us here today on our podcast. I want to remind you to share it with as many people as possible. The more people hear it, the more people we can help our Lord save and heal. Stay connected by following us on your favorite social media platform at R4H Podcast. That is the letter R, the number 4, and the letter H Podcast. Also check us out on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, where you can actually see the interviews on video. And remember, in a world where things are dark, Christ is the light. And there's always a reason for hope. This is Mario Costabile. Until next time, peace.